You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Tuesday, 4th of August. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Houghton, Johannesburg. On the show today, Mateta Tulari, we're talking markets, the rand. It's lost like a rand in the last couple of days. ABSA PMI data for July, not so positive, but employment remains under pressure. And Advitech launched an online-only school kicking off in January 2021. This show is proudly sponsored by FMI, a division of Bidvest Life Limited. Make your impact, protect your income first. The views and opinions expressed in this show do not reflect the views and opinions of FMI. Some morning headlines from MoneyWeb: SARS is seeking to criminalize mistakes. And from Business Day, ShopRite changes former CEO Whitey Person's Africa strategy and pulls out of Nigeria. Morning markets, US was green last night, S&P up 0.7%, NASDAQ up 1.5%, Asia following suit with the green, Sydney plus 1.6%, Tokyo up 1.4%. Commodities mixed, PGMs a little greener, the rest a little red. Gold, $1,981 an ounce, Rand, 17.20, and top 40 opening call, green up about a third of a percent.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Mateta Tulari. He's head FX execution at RMB. Mateta, appreciate your time this morning. The rand yesterday suddenly just sort of taking a dive, disappearing. And I suppose, I mean, what happens? It catches me every time. Rand kind of strengthening, kind of lulling us into a sense that all is good. And then over the last four or five trading days, at one point, one rand weaker. We do have a volatile currency, and I suppose we need to be cognizant of that and not get lulled into a sense of complacency.
Good morning, Simon. As you say, it's quite interesting. I think that's why on the trading floor we call the rand the rattlesnake, because you never know exactly when it's going to bite you. So, you know, it's quite interesting because, I mean, obviously we're heading into the month of August, and it's been traditionally the best month for the dollar. And it's quite interesting when you look at it that the rand has weakened in August in actually the four out of the past 5 years, with an average decline of around, call it 5.3%. And you know, the average drop for the second worst month is in May. And you know that whole story about sell in May and go away. So, you know, most of the time in that four out of the 5 years, we've seen the rand weaken about 2.9% in the month of May. But that's it. I mean, obviously, as you say, we are the second most volatile currency in the world. And obviously, I think just yesterday, I mean, you know, we saw the rand slump as much as 1.6%. That's obviously the fifth straight day of declines. And it's the longest losing streak that we've had since February. So, look, I think over and above what's happening with the U.S.-China trade war and those tensions, I mean, we already have seen Donald Trump talking about, you know, the sale of TikTok needing to happen by the 15th of September. We know that there's the U.S. elections that are coming up as well. But obviously, even the corona pandemic that's obviously engulfing the world, that's also putting a bit of a negative sentiment and a damper on markets across the board. Also, you know, just from a local perspective, I mean, the sentiment isn't too great. I think, you know, we're still struggling in terms of all the structural reform and actually seeing the actual implementation thereof. You know, week after week, we have still cases of, obviously, Eskom lingering about SAA. There's not much certainty. And I think, you know, compounded by that, we also saw outflows in the bond market last week equating to around $2 billion worth of outflows by foreigners.
Yeah, and to your point, I mean, our rand is volatile, and this also we are seeing, truthfully, some US dollar strength after some weakness there. ShopRite update yesterday, market liked it. I mean, truthfully, one of our top retailers in the country, we all buying food, even during a lockdown. You know, that's a good update from them, was to be expected. I mean, you know, they lost liquor sales, and that's obviously a big margin, but they really did knock it out the park. The big story, perhaps, is they're throwing in the towel on Nigeria, that they've tried hard, and they're saying this just that doesn't work for us. We can't make Nigeria viable. Let's rather exit that joint venture.
So it's quite interesting. Obviously they've seen, just from a numbers perspective, their full year adjustment basic earnings per share was like obviously between 14 to 22% higher. But as you say, the big story is Nigeria. Over and above that, they're shutting their second store in Kenya after a few months of trade, mm-hmm. So which is quite interesting. It's not only the likes of ShopRite that has obviously exited Nigeria. We know some other South African counterparts that have obviously exited Nigeria. And I think also it's quite interesting given the fact that we all know that the story in Nigeria is not an easy one, especially for a lot of South African companies that obviously plan to go up north. Obviously, ShopRite alluded to the fact that the decision was an indication of the difficult business environment in Nigeria and could obviously discourage potential foreign investors. Obviously, we have seen over the past few years where ourselves and Nigeria have been fighting to be the biggest economy in Africa. So that is going to be quite interesting. But obviously, the move by ShopRite might lead to a sale of majority of all its stakes in the country. So it's going to be quite interesting to see how that pans out. But obviously, I think more than anything for them, their focus could now be shifting to more local and actually consolidate the local market.
Yeah, a local market, they do very well. Yeah, your point around Nigeria, a bit of a graveyard. I remember Telkom lost, about 5 billion rand there. Woolies taking pain there. MTN about the only people making it work, and they get into serious trouble from time to time. Mateta Tulari, Head FX Execution RMB, appreciate your time.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Chatting now with Chris Niekerk. He's MD of Evolve. And if you're saying Evolve, never heard of it, well, no, that's because it's launched only yesterday. It's Advertech's online schooling option. Chris, appreciate your time this morning. An online school, is this something that was on the Advertech radar ahead of the pandemic, or is this just very much a response to a pandemic that will obviously last long after the pandemic has passed?
Morning, Simon, and to your listeners. Advertech's response to the pandemic was our brick-and-mortar school's hybrid product, mm-hmm. Which is currently being rolled out. And you'd find that in our core fraternity, our Abbots colleges and the like. The conceptualization of the online school offering, however, started already in 2019, where we looked into the market for possible partners mm-hmm. or maybe acquisitions. But, after looking at all the options, we decided that we would be better off going this on our own. And started the research and development process. And the rollout is scheduled for 2021, January, as it is now. And we decided to stick to that plan to make sure that when we do go to market, it is substantive and it's sustainable.
Yeah, and this is, online teaching is a lot. In 2020, a lot of the online teaching has just been about Zoom. But truthfully, there's a lot more to it than just launching an app. There needs to be the full package. There needs to be the full support to it. It's not just a case of, everyone click on a link and sit in a Zoom call. It's a lot more complexity.
Yeah, exactly. You've got that on spot on. So what you'll find in the market is the two categories. You've got your traditional distance learning products that is added on a little bit of an interaction element to it. Mm-hmm. And then you've got the guys that came in a little bit later when technology was already there and effectively put a classroom behind the screen with some PDF-like support. Mm-hmm. So those are the two. But when we were investigating this, it was exactly what you're saying now. It's quite easy, in fact, and we've seen that in especially the private schooling market during the pandemic. It's quite easy to put a teacher behind the screen. But that's not a user-centric online or digital learning experience. That's simply a teacher behind the screen. So what we've done is we've backwards engineered what we're going to offer from a user experience point of view. We've done our research and development. We've taken a product from MIT for curriculum mapping purposes. We've taken the best out of machine learning that it can give so that we can, in fact, check individualized curriculum map experience for each one of our students so that they can go at their own accelerated pace if they're more talented in some areas, or they can be more deliberate in learning if they need to stay on certain topics a little bit longer. And in that sense, instead of providing something that replicates the classroom or even trying to do that, you're looking at the online learning space in its own right and develop a user-centric experience for that space, so to speak.
That's a great point. I mean, typically, you know, teaching as it's evolved over the last, 100 years or so, is fairly cookie cutter. You've got X number of kids in a class, and there's an expectation they're all going to learn at the same pace, and they're all going to learn the same subject. As soon as you move online, you get a lot more individualism around the individual student. As you say, the pace at which they want to study. Perhaps they want to go down a different rabbit hole or spend a little bit more time on a certain aspect of the curriculum. And online, and it absolutely enables it. It's one of the huge advantages of this is that the individual students can sort of go at their own pace, go at their own interest, and probably ultimately get a far superior education from it.
Yeah, so if you do it right, obviously, and there's been a seeming kind of a rush to market to draw some short-term gain out of the pandemic in this space, and we've deliberately not done that.
Mm-hmm.
Simply because we want to make sure that when we do go to market in January, that our product can do that. And one of the things you're speaking to now is the difference between the mastery of a concept and simply getting a percentage of knowledge in a certain aspect or certain concept that would then progress you to the next level. So, for example, in your more typical environment, if you take something like math, if you get 50% for math in grade 6, you progress to grade 7.
Mm-hmm.
Now, to get 50% again, it's going to be very difficult because 50% of the foundation isn't there. And you might get 40% then in grade 7, and so it goes on grade 8 to get to 35. Then you get progressed to subject choice, and you can't choose math as a subject. And it's not because of the year before. It's because a few years ago, you were progressed at a 50% percentage pass. And that's how the typical system works. Now, in the online space, all the technology is available, and Colin Northmore and his team have done brilliantly to go into the market and find the best of what the market has to offer in those technologies and systems. To work on mastery rather than a percentage pass. And you can work on mastery in each little element of each one of the types of subjects to make sure that if a child masters the areas that they feel comfortable with. But if they've got an issue with aspects of a concept that may be language related to a subject, such as geography as a language aspect, mm-hmm. even math as a language aspect, so, you know, for example, that if they have an issue with that, they can stay on that a little bit longer, but it means they can master it in the end. And when they do progress, they progress from a solid end instead of progressing because of some normalized percentage that has been decided for the kind of mass population. And that's really the essence of what online learning for Evolve will be, is to make sure that we can, in fact, give you that unique learning path that's often referenced to you, but is rather elusive in the market.
Yeah, and one of the beauties, of course, is I could be living in one of the smallest cities, towns in South Africa, and I can access it. Chris van Niekerk, MD of Evolve, the AdvoTech Online College, launching January. Appreciate your time. When you protect your monthly income against the risk of injury, illness, and death, you protect your future and the impact you make on those around you. FMI has been protecting South Africans' income for over 25 years. Constantly innovating to provide greater claim certainty and cover for more occupations than ever before. Make your impact, protect your income first. FMI, life done better. FMI, a division of Bidvest Life, is a licensed life insurer and authorized financial services provider.
MoneyWeb now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Miolana Mioleki. He's an economist at ABSA, talking at PMI data, which came out yesterday. I love the PMI because it's so quick to come out. July slipped a little, 51.2 versus 53.9. Miolani, what struck me here, a couple of points on it. New sales orders still above 50. This could in part be that the company's catching up on production that they sort of like fell behind during hard lockdown rather than perhaps increases in demand. So it's a good number, but in many cases we need to sort of look behind those numbers to get a sense of what's happening on the ground.
That's an important point, and the issue that we're coming from a very low base in April and May, where restrictions were so tight that most manufacturers were just not operating. So in June, it's a very strong bounce. It made sense that those restrictions were relaxed. And I think we'll continue to see that pick up, you know, from that very low base in July from new data. But I think when you look at the new sales orders, you can already see that momentum that we saw in June is starting to fade a little bit. New sales orders are still expanding, but certainly the pace of the increase not as robust as what we saw in June. I think this is a caution about the kind of activity levels that we see over the coming months.
Melanie, really rough line that, and if I could ask you perhaps try the other side of the room, we might get something a little bit better there. We also see export sales starting to pick up in a sense, and I suppose that really tells us, you know, our largest trading partner is Europe. We're starting to see that recovery in Europe. Obviously, second quarter GDP, that was to end of June. We're looking at July here. It does indicate that parts of the world, Europe in this case, is starting to recover. We get a bit of a benefit from that because we're exporting it. It might be small, but it's not insignificant. And in an economy under pressure, it's certainly helping us.
So that's right. I think we've already seen some of the PMI data out of the UAE as well, also signaling that in activity in the region is starting to pick up a little bit. It's an important export market for South Africa. So I think if we see that recovery pick up a bit of momentum over the next 3 months, it could be quite positive of the domestic manufacturing sector, particularly those parts of it that are more output-facing. Because I think that those parts of local manufacturing that face domestic demand, I think will be under a lot of pressure. We've already seen, for example, famine, the new car sales that came out yesterday for July, that if you look at those numbers, we've certainly picked up a little bit from June, but still way, way below where we were pre-lockdown.
Yeah, and the last one, lots of bright spots, lots of data behind it. The one that is truthfully not a bright spot remains the employment PMI data. That index remains low. Companies have shed jobs and they're simply not picking them up at the speed at which they shed them. And this remains a way bigger issue for our broader economy and society. The lack of job creation, even as we sort of recover out of hard lockdown.
No, absolutely. I think for us, this is certainly the most concerning sort of index. Certainly we had lots of anecdotal stories over the last couple of months that, the extent of job losses in the South African economy over the last few months have turned into millions. But so far, we haven't really seen hard data. And I think one of the things that will really be critical to look out for is that quarterly labor force survey that is coming out on the 11th of August from SSA, which is going to show us a clear indication of just how big the knock on jobs was in the second quarter. But certainly when you look at things like the employment sub-index of the PMI, you get a sense that report is going to be shocking.
Yeah, it has been. And we're seeing it in the U.S. to a degree. The employment recovered, but it's stuck at about 1.3, 1.4 million jobless claims every week, just not picking up. Mielani, really appreciate your time today. He's an economist at APSA. That's it for today. You'll find us live every weekday morning, 6:30, on the MoneyWeb website or the MoneyWeb app. Podcast every morning from 7 a.m. wherever good podcasts are aggregated. You can chat to us on the social media. Use the hashtag MoneyWebNow. This show was proudly sponsored by FMI, a division of Bidvest Life Limited. Make your impact, protect your income first. The views and opinions expressed in this show do not reflect the views and opinions of FMI. Massive thanks to my team, Eddie and Cordora, to you for listening, my guests for the early morning contributions. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.